Hello, and welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is a monthly periodical of original crime and mystery fiction. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. In our podcast series, we bring you readings of short stories from the back issues of our magazine to give you an idea of what the magazine is about. Today we have Robert Lopresti reading his story, Snake in the Sweetgrass, from the December 2003 issue of the magazine. Robert Lopresti won the Black Orchid Novella Award in 2012 for his story, The Red Envelope. The Black Orchid Novella Award, or BONA, is co-sponsored by AHMM and the Wolf Pack, the official Nero Wolf Society. Robert Lopresti is also the author of the novel, Such a Killing Crime, set among the coffee houses and folk clubs in New York City's Greenwich Village in the early 1960s. In today's story, you'll hear the author's wife, Terry Weiner, playing the fiddle, as well as Robert Lopresti himself on auto harp. Their daughter, Susan Weiner, composed the tune, Snake in the Sweetgrass. The other tune you'll hear is the traditional melody, Prettiest Gal in the County.
I can't remember what state we're in. We're near home, I can smell that much. But are we in Kentucky or Tennessee or even West Virginia? Don't know. If I asked Mac, he'd shake that long mop of hair and say, I've told you 10 times, old man, now shut up and don't let anyone else know how senile you are or they'll send us all home. Fuzzy would tell me, but he'd wear that sad smile and talk to me like I was 5 years old. That's even worse than Mac's bad manners and blasphemy. I know this is the Summer Mountain Folk Festival because it says so on the fancy banners hanging everywhere. Wish they put the name of the state on them, too. I was studying on that today while we were playing Yellow Barber. I suppose I got so worried about geography I forgot to bow at all. Fuzzy quit picking and Mac cursed. That woke me up and I started in again. We got through the next tune okay and I began to perk up. That's when I saw Livy. She was sitting in the front row with a big smile on her face, looking every bit as sweet as the day I met her. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. When Mac was introducing the prettiest gal in the county, I stepped up to a microphone. I said, I want to dedicate this one to Livy. Livy was Cleve's late wife, Fuzzy told the crowd. They were married for 43 years. Isn't that something? Everybody clapped, but I just stared at him. Livy dead? I looked back at the audience, and she was gone. I was so surprised, I fetched up a few sour notes, and Mac glared at me over his banjo. Sometimes I wonder if I can still play worth a lick. Maybe I should just sit down and let the youngsters take over. But there are other times I feel like one of them petrified trees me and Livy saw when we were out west in the 60s. The wood in those trees has turned to rock, and maybe all my memories and the spring in my step and everything else I've lost, well, maybe all of them has turned into music, because some days it feels like I'm better than ever. But this wasn't one of those days. We had dinner in the performer's tent. Mac and Fuzzy argued with one of the cooks over something special they wanted in their supper. Ferns they'd found out in the woods. You'd think they would know better. Mac is almost 40 and Fuzzy is just over 30. Together they're almost as old as me. But those boys still think nature is something out of a kiddie cartoon, and anything with dirt on it is better for you than anything store-bought. Me, I was enjoying a hamburger and corn on the cob. One of the volunteers, a pretty little Oriental girl, cut the corn for me, because my teeth are on the down-go. You meet the dangdest people at these festivals. At the next table, there were these fellows from Africa who play their music on a gadget looks like some old gourd with wires on it. Sounds great. Over on the other side were some gal musicians who looked like my brother Rayford when he got back from fighting the Germans. Shaved heads and combat boots. Takes all kinds, I guess. Mac put down his fork and leaned toward me. Here comes the boss, said it real quiet. His name is Hank. You met him last night. The festival director was a big smiling man. Cleve, great to see you. They treating you okay? Doing just fine, Hank. You got wonderful people here. We sure do. I can't tell you what an honor it is to have you here, Cleve. You know, I think your Kentucky Reel was the first album I ever bought. Is that a fact? Yeah, that one bought me groceries for quite some time. How you feeling, Cleve? I hope we haven't given you too busy a schedule. Mac made a face. He knew, same as me, the boss must have heard I wasn't clicking on all cylinders today. He said, "You know, Hank, we just rolled in from the West Coast last night." I followed Mac's trail. "Yeah, I'm still a little tired. Always takes me a while to get kicking after a long trip. But you just watch us tomorrow, right, boys?" Mac said, "You bet." Fuzzy nodded, but he didn't look up from his vegetable stew. Hank went off to glad hand somebody else, and Mac glared at me. "You better be good to go tomorrow, Granddad. He's no relative to me. I wouldn't put up with his nonsense from a real grandson." "We can't carry you forever." Fuzzy said, "Ease up on him. It's not his fault he's too old." I said, "Too old?" ready to give him a piece of my mind. "Is that what you told Hank?" Mac asked, real nasty. Fuzzy didn't deny it. I felt right out of heart about that. "Get up, old man," Mac told me the next morning. "You already missed breakfast." I said, I'm feeling sick. He sat down on the edge of my hotel bed. It always burns me when he does that, but he doesn't care. "Rise and shine, we got a living to earn, remember?" He stood up and yanked down the covers. "Out, we're on stage in 2 hours. Tell him I'm too peaked. Tell him I'm old." Mac put a hand on my shoulder and started to yank till I was sitting up. His thumb dug into my skin a couple inches from that old scar I got there. He gave me a mean smile. "You think I won't hurt you?" Said it real soft. "Just try me and see. Keep squeezing and I won't even be able to hold my bow." He let go. "On your feet, Cleve. It's another glorious day in showbiz." "Where's Fuzzy?" "Ben went for a hike in the woods. He's not scheduled to play until after lunch." Ben is Fuzzy's real name. Fuzzy Solomon was my first guitar player, and I call all my pickers after him, save learning a bushel of names over the years. Mac laughed. "You thinking of telling Ben what a bad man I am, Cleve? Paranoia is a symptom of Alzheimer's, you know. You start telling tales on me, and it would give Ben just the proof he needs to put you in an old folks' home. Is that what you want?" I got up to greet the day the Lord provided. All summer we play the festivals, bluegrass, old-time, fiddle and folk. All over the country, and Canada too. When it turns cold, we switch to indoor shows. Seems like I've been doing this forever. Summer Mountain had 5 small stages running all day, and then one big evening show every night. Me and Mac were on one of those little stages that morning, doing a workshop on Appalachian fiddling. Mac usually plays banjo with me, but he's a good fiddler in his own right, and he was showing off the licks he learned from a lot of them good old boys who passed on. I was right pleased that the host of the workshop was Isaiah Barwood, a colored fellow from Alabama. He's a fine gentleman, and plays Cumberland style, sweet as a bird singing. I hadn't seen him since he was Mac's age, and now there's more salt than pepper in his hair. But it was the fourth player who really got me thinking. He was between hay and grass, barely old enough to drive, and he had what they call bleach blonde hair, like one of them rock musicians. The boy wore a white undershirt and dungarees. Now that's no way to dress for a paying audience. Mac and Fuzzy complained about having to wear ties on stage, but I won't play with them if they don't dress fitty. Mac always wears one of his silly-looking ties with cartoon characters and such, but I reckon that reflects on him, not me. Anyway, that blonde boy. Turns out he was from my home state, and Isaiah introduced him as the next great Kentucky fiddler. Well, that made me sit up and pay attention, I tell you. And he was fine. He'd spent too much time listening to records and not enough to old boys in person, but he was good. The four of us went through most of the show, smooth as ice on a pond, taking turns and swapping tunes. Then that blonde boy got up and made a speech about what an honor it was to be on stage with a living legend like Cleve Penny, and how proud he was to get a chance to hear me play tunes the way they used to play 'em. The way they used to play 'em? What does that mean? Don't I still play 'em? And then that boy done played Sneakin' the Sweetgrass. Now, excuse you me, but that's what they call a signature tune, and you don't play a signature tune when the man who made it famous is right up on the stage next to you. No, sir, no, sir. My mama, bless her heart, used to tell me back yonder, the madder you get, the wider you smile. So I gave that blonde boy the biggest grin I could fetch up. Isaiah and Mac each played again, and then it was up to me to finish the workshop. I stepped over to the microphone and told everyone how honored I was to be there and what a wonderful time I was having. Now I'd like to play you a real old-timey tune that's rolled around my family for a coon's age. I learned it from my great uncle Hodge Penny. It's called Snake in the Sweetgrass. Then I burned that stage down. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That tune's supposed to start slow, but I could hear Max standing up, ready to come tell me I was making a mistake, that I ought to play something else. He thought I was such a doddering fool I didn't know that song had just been played. Well, fine. Let him think that. Let them all think that. I jumped in too fast for him to interrupt, almost as glib as the blonde boy was playing when he finished, and then I sped up. Now, playing fast makes you look slick in a fiddling contest, but speed don't mean much if you ain't going nowhere, if you get my drift. But Lord, I was traveling. I threw in extra shakes and trills, grace notes by the barrel, double stops all over the place. I ran up the neck and down again. I took that tune places it had never been afore, my mercy. Second time through the B part, I turned around just to show how easy this all was. Mac was bobbing his head and grinning like a fool. Isaiah winked at me, and that blonde boy was pale as his undershirt. Now you know how we used to play him, sonny. When I stopped, the crowd got up on their hind legs and cheered like it was VJ Day. "What was that stuff you and Mac had for lunch?" I asked Fuzzy. We were back at the hotel, and he was helping me get ready for a nap. "That's tofu, Cleve. You should try it." I took a bite. Looks like glue, but glue tastes better. No thanks. I had a rib sandwich with some fine barbecue sauce. It ain't real good. He frowned. "That stuff's bad for you. You need to take better care of yourself. Too late to start at my age. Help me get the shirt off." "Your age is the point, Cleve. There's no need for you to be on the road all the time. You could stay home, do a concert every couple of months. You want me to sit around and lose my edge, Fuzzy? I got a living to make. I bet that blonde boy was wishing I would stay home and get rusty." "Look, Cleve, I love performing with you. It's an honor, maybe the highlight of my career." "I hear a butt coming." "There's no need for you to wear yourself out like this. There's people who want to hear me play, Fuzzy. That gal Rhonda called Mac today. She's booked us for 2 more weekends next month." "That's another thing." He grimaced. "You let Rhonda handle all your money as well as your booking." "So? You know she sleeps with Mac, right?" I shook my head. "You think she's going to steal my fortune, Fuzzy? Don't have one, but so far I'm keeping you in tofu, ain't I?" "You're letting Mac control your life, Cleve, and maybe he doesn't have your best interest at heart." I really didn't want to hear this stuff. "Not for you to say, Fuzzy. You cut your own weeds, and I'll do the same." "Where do you get that?" "What? You got a new bruise on your shoulder." I thought about what Mac had said. Paranoia is a symptom of Alzheimer's. Must have bumped into something. Mac woke me up from my nap at 2 and told me somebody was coming to interview me, a writer from Wireless Strings. "Stupid name," I told him. "Never heard of it. Tell him I'm too tired. Besides, I have to get ready for tonight's show." "It's web-based, Cleve. That's why you never heard of it." "Web? You mean computers? Not even a real magazine?" "No, sir. No, sir. Tell him he can come back when he..." "What are you doing?" Mac had opened my fiddle case and was dangling my best instrument off one finger by a tuning peg. "That reporter is a her, not a him, and she has to write about something. If you won't talk to her, I can at least explain how a senile old man tripped and busted his 100-year-old violin. I bet she can have people weeping over that. What do you say?" I say that man has just about worn me clean through. The writer, her name was Althea, turned out to be a real nice lady and a fine looker, too. When she found out, I hadn't seen anything of Summer Mountain State Park except the little corner where the festival was taking place. She made Mac and me come out with her to see some of the pretty balds and meadows. I've been all over this great country, and believe you me, there's no place more beautiful than these Appalachians. All the time she drove, she asked me questions and took down what I said with her little recording gadget. "Did you ever meet Carrie Hillerman, Mr. Penny?" "Sure did. Carrie was a great fiddler. Beat me once in a contest in Mississippi. 57, I think it was. Fessed up to me later he had an in with one of the judges." "Oh, Mr. Penny, really? He bribed them?" "Not with money, of course. He'd have never done that. But the judge had a very pretty sister, and Carrie promised not to court her if he won. See, Carrie had a reputation in those days. Now, I'm pretty sure it was Leif Grimms who bragged about doing that stunt, and he probably made it up. But Carrie wouldn't have minded, and with both of them dead at Coon's age, what's the harm if I tell a windy or two?" Althea drove us up to what she said was the prettiest spot in the whole park, but I told him I was too bush to walk to the viewpoint. "You mind if we take a little stroll without you, Cleve?" Mac asked. "Is that okay?" He was being real nice to me in front of the girl. I think he was sweet on her. I said, "You go ahead. I'll just rest in the car." That's all I meant to do. But I looked over to the far end of the parking lot, and there on the grass was a ring of mushrooms. People from my part of the mountains don't eat those things much, but I thought maybe the nature boys would enjoy them, better than that tofu stuff for sure. So I got out to take a look. Most of the mushrooms were white, with little brown points down the side, Shaggy Manes, they're called, and they eat good. But a few of the ring were different. Gray-white, like a mourning dove, with a little dimple on the hat and slits down the side of the stem. Those fellows sent a shiver right down my tail. I remember my mama, bless her heart, saying back yonder, "See them, Cleveland? Them sweating mushrooms. Don't never go near them. Just a bite of one of them killed your cousin Horace, my mercy." I could hear her voice like she was standing next to me. Althea and Mac were still out of sight. I felt in my jacket pocket and found the tinfoil wrapper from that sandwich I had for lunch. I fetched up a bunch of mushrooms, good and bad together, like dawn on the Day of Judgment. Might come in handy. Our first big number at the concert that night went fine. I started to play what I thought was the next tune, and Mac stopped me. "We're going to do Hickory Jack, Cleve." I just stared at him. Hickory Jack? I swear I never heard the name before. Was he making it up? A couple of thousand people staring at me and no idea what to do next. Lord, Lord. Then Fuzzy picked up a rhythm and my hands took over. I'd never heard that tune, I swear, but I guess my hands had. My fiddle started to play and I just closed my eyes and listened. Can't remember the rest of the show, but folks said it was one of our best. Of course, maybe they think of it that way on account of what happened later. All the performers had a late supper to celebrate the end of the festival, and then I hit the hay. Mac and Fuzzy went back to the party. Moans woke me up. First, I guessed Mac and that reporter had gotten along better than I thought, but it wasn't that kind of noise. Somebody was ailing. Then came the sirens. I closed my eyes and went back to sleep. Nothing an old man could do anyway. Nobody came to see me for breakfast. I woke on my own and was just starting to go out when I heard somebody crying in the living room. I waited till he was done. My old daddy, bless his heart, used to say back yonder, "Ain't no disgrace for a man to cry, son, but he shouldn't let nobody see him do it." When the weeping stopped, I went out. He was sitting on the couch with his head in his hands. "Don't we have to hit the road today?" I asked. Mac looked up at me. "Oh, Cleve, I'm so sorry. Ben is dead." "Fuzzy?" I sat down hard. "No. How did it happen?" "Poison. They think he picked some mushrooms when he was out hiking yesterday. He must have put them in the soup he ate after the show. Some were fine, but damn it." Looked like he was going to cry again. "What a shame. My mercy, what a shame." I almost said something harsh about those boys treating nature with too much love, not enough caution, but that wouldn't have been fair, considering. "Anybody call his family?" I asked. Mac looked startled. "No, he's got a sister in New York. I'll have Rhonda look up the number." I said, "Good." He picked up that little phone of his and hit buttons, happy to be doing something. "While I'm at it, I'll have her cancel the other gigs." "Whoa, what do you want to do that for?" He stared at me. "Ben's dead, Cleve. I didn't think you'd want to keep going. You aren't thinking straight, son. I mean no disrespect to Ben. He was a fine player. But I don't reckon it was him people paid to see. And while I don't like to brag, I believe there are plenty of guitar pickers who know my tunes." I pointed to his little phone. "Shoot, I bet you could make 3 calls and find someone who would love to play with us next week. Am I right?" "Yeah," Mac was nodding. "Yeah, I guess we owe it to Fuzzy, to Ben, to keep going." "That's the spirit. I knew I could count on you." He picked up the phone and I went to take a shower. My shoulder was aching. Not from that little pinch Mac had given me. That was nothing. But from the scar I got back yonder when I told Livy I was sick of the road and didn't want to tour anymore. "You can't earn a cent without that fiddle, you no-account fool," she told me. "And do you think people around this little town will pay enough to keep us alive?" Then she hit me on the shoulder with a red-hot fireplace poker. What a woman. 43 years she kept me going through all my miseries and blue funks. After the cancer took her from me, I sat on the porch for almost 5 years, hardly ever touching the bow. Then Mac came along, hunting for old Kentucky fiddlers. He shook me loose and got me playing again. Got me living again. Was I supposed to wait till Fuzzy found some judge or doctor willing to take all that away from me? Make me retire for good and sit on the porch again till me or the house collapsed? No, sir. No, sir. There's people down the road waiting to hear me play.
Robert Lopresti reading his story, Snake in the Sweetgrass, from the December 2003 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is published 10 times a year by Dell Magazines. To learn more about us, we urge you to go to our website, themysteryplace.com, or look for us on Facebook. You can find the magazine at your newsstand, and digital versions are now available from Amazon, Apple, Barnes & Noble, Magster, Sony, Zinio, and now on Google Play for your Android. This podcast was produced with the help of Jackie Sherbo and Deanna McLafferty. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. Thanks for tuning in.